Good evening and welcome along to The Score, our weekly sports show here in Highland, where we preview and review all the big stories in the world of sport here in the Northwest. I'm your host, Mark Gallagher, and I will be with you from now right through until 8 o'clock this evening on what is a busy show as always. Coming up on the programme tonight, we'll look ahead to the big Gidor Derby in the Donegal League this weekend. United and Celtic go head-to-head at Carrickboyle, and we'll hear from managers Paul McGee and Michael McKelvey. Chloe McGee will speak about the ongoing Badminton Irish Open, and we'll take a closer look at the big games for Burt and Setanta in the Ulster Club Hurling Championships this weekend by getting the thoughts of their respective managers Enda McDermott and Mark Marley. But firstly, we're going to start with one of the most unique and remarkable achievements I can remember featuring on The Score since I started doing the show anyway, and that is the achievement of Donegal's latest world record breaker, Katrina Jennings. Katrina made history last weekend as she set a new world record in America. She won the 2025 Tunnel Hill 100 mile race in Illinois, setting the fastest time any woman has ever ran 100 miles in a staggering time of 12 hours, 37 minutes and 4 seconds. It's a remarkable achievement for the 2012 Olympian, who proudly donned her Letterkenny AC vest as she crossed the finish line last Sunday. And I am very excited to say now joining us on the Score programme this evening is the woman of the moment. Firstly, Katrina, huge congratulations. World record holder Katrina Jennings is a nice way to be getting introduced these days.
No, it sounds very sweet, Mark. Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
No bother. Come here, I have a lot of questions about this achievement, but I need to start off by asking you how the legs are. Not that it's in any way comparable to what you did at the weekend, but I just know from my own experience and doing a few tough hikes here and there that it's maybe the few days after that you really feel it in the legs, or maybe that's just me, is it?
Well, I was expecting my legs to be absolutely dead for the week. I thought I'd be hobbling around, unable to walk. But they've actually been grand, to be honest. I'm kind of pleasantly surprised. Now, I've done a bit of, like, I've been on the bike and just kind of, tried to do some, like, just spinning them around to get some movement in them without any pounding. So that's probably helped. But, definitely, I think I've probably been sorer after some marathons I've done, to be honest.
Let's get on to the race of the weekend. It was the Tunnel Hill 100 over in Illinois. You clocked 12 hours, 37 minutes and 14 seconds over the 100 miles, which is the fastest any woman has ever done it. Maybe can you give us a wee bit of background into the race itself?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I looked at the race and I knew that it was a nice course. It's run on a converted train track. So obviously the old train line was removed and it was replaced with kind of crushed concrete or something. So it's not a tarmac surface, but it's still like it's a nice relatively hard surface with like little stones on top. So it was nice for running on. It's quite rural in southern Illinois, but very pretty. So lots of nice nature to admire as you're running by. It wasn't a huge feat, which meant that I ended up running a lot of the race on my own. And I suppose that was tough, but at the same time, I was prepared for it because I knew I'd be spending a lot of time on my own during the race, and I was just focused then on the various aid stations that they were kind of about 5 miles every 5 miles on the course. So I'd be just looking forward to getting to the next one and getting some fuel into me. And so I think it was a nice day. It was a bit hotter than expected. It went up to 23 degrees at one point, which is hot for November, and I certainly wasn't prepared for that. But it just meant that I ended up having to take on extra water and electrolytes during the course. But it all worked out all right.
100 miles is just over 160 kilometres. It's about as far as Letterkenny to RD here, just to put it into a bit of perspective for those of us that'll be up and down to Dublin. You averaged 4 minutes and 42 seconds per kilometre. That's 47 minutes per 10 kilometres. That's a fast pace to be holding for 160 kilometres, isn't it?
It is when you put it like that. But to be fair, I think if I set off from Letterkenny to run to Dublin, it would be like a much bigger challenge.
Fair enough.
I think when you break it down into just smaller segments and just like think about the time that you're in at the moment. And I just kept checking in with myself and saying, like, look, I was looking at my heart rate. My heart rate was low and I felt good and I knew I was getting in the nutrition. And I just kept saying, well, like, I feel fine now, so I may as well keep going until we see what happens.
And the previous record, it was held by Camille Herron since 2017. You shaved over 5 minutes off her time. Was the record something that was in your head as you went into the race?
Was yeah I knew what it was, and I it was something that I was kind of I knew it would take a really good run to get it, but it was something that I was kind of looking at, and I planned my race around the possibility of getting it. So when I was working out my target pace and kind of the region, which in like the region of that pace that I wanted to be running at, it was kind of focused on that record. But I was also looking at like the Irish women's record as well, which was a target that I really wanted to get if things weren't going well and I kind of fell off pace for the world record. And also then I was looking at the Irish men's record, which is that was 13:18, and I was like, oh well, that'd be kind of sweet to get if if I didn't get the world record as well.
Yeah, and obviously that's the plan going into these kind of endurance events. But from speaking to people that do these kind of events, there are so many variables of things that can just make you not feel quite as good or run quite as quick for as long. When was the first time in the race that you thought, I might actually break this world record here?
Well, I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I knew from like the first mile that I felt brilliant, and I knew I was going to have a good day because I generally know very early in the race how I feel. And although there was a huge unknown, of course, with this one, I did know that I felt brilliant, and my training had gone just so well. And even in the I had been sick 2 weeks out, which meant that I had like basically had to take a full week off running. But then the week leading in, I was like just doing my usual taper. But at the same time, any time I went to run, I felt amazing, and I was like really just trying to slow myself down more than anything. So the second the race started and I was running the first mile, I just knew I was feeling really, really strong. And then I suppose fast forward, like, I mean, I was almost like really looking forward to getting to the 50 miles because, that was halfway, and I felt like the first half of the race was almost like irrelevant because, I mean, you just had to be so patient and kind of disciplined on your pacing for that part. But once I got into the second 50 mile, I was like, well, now the race kind of really starts because this is the kind of unknown territory as well. But I still remained really confident throughout that. And when I went through the kind of start finish line for the last time before the finish itself, I was at the 76 mile mark, so I had 24 miles to go. And in that section, you went up, you climbed, kind of cl there was a 9 mile incline, a very gradual incline, but it was still a climb. So I figured if I can get to the turnaround here, which was 12 miles later, within and still on kind of relative target, that I would definitely come down the hill and do it. So I was kind of, once I got to that 12 mile turnaround, or 12 miles from home, I was starting to get like more confident that it was definitely, that it was on the cards and it would happen.
And along the way, you said that you were kind of breaking it into 5 mile segments. You had support along with you for drinks and energy gels, that kind of thing.
I did, yeah. My husband Martin came with me, so he was able to get to every aid station. He would drive between the various aid stations. We had sat down beforehand, and I had, we had planned out exactly what he was going to give me at each one. Obviously, it's a long race, so you kind of need various things throughout the day. But generally, it was just gels, carbohydrate drink, water, and electrolytes. So he was able to get to all of those, and I was just kind of, yeah, look, like kind of focused on getting to the next one and getting my nutrition again, and yeah, ticking it off that way.
You mentioned that your training went really well. I want to talk to you a wee bit about the training. How, and that's kind of more the mental side of things that we touched on. How does one just get into the physical shape required to run 100 miles quicker than anybody else can?
So I would say it's actually not terribly dissimilar to a marathon training block, but just Just long runs at the weekend, and also maybe trying to fit in a couple of additional sessions during the week, if you can. But obviously, well, I know I work during the week, so I find if I'm working, it's harder to, get the time during the week to fit in those additional sessions. But the weekends are great because, well, firstly, for an endurance run like this, the two back-to-back long runs of the weekend are the most important anyway. And if you can just, so I just focused on getting in like two really good quality back-to-back sessions on the weekends where I was really loading the legs and making sure I was running on a Sunday with tired legs from Saturday, and kind of preparing that way without without ever really being able to hit anywhere close to the distance of the race in training.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it was great to see you crossing the line, breaking the record in your Letterkenny AC jersey. The club means a great deal to you, I'm sure. And it's a big achievement for them as well to have someone wearing their colours break a world record.
Well, yeah, I'm always really proud to put on the Letterkenny vest and run for the club. And yeah, it's like my dad ran for the club as well, and it's just really nice to continue to run for the club, and I have that association with home. And yeah, I suppose it is nice for the club. I mean, gosh, I'm looking at the girls like coming through at the moment, Erin Friel, and some of the younger people coming through, and it's just brilliant for the club and the amount of talent that's there, that's coming through, and I'm just really happy to be part of that.
So, Katrina, you're an Olympian. I know your sister Sinead's a great athlete as well, also an Olympian. Where does this world record compare in terms of your sporting achievements in life?
Well, I think the Olympics is still like my probably number one achievement, just
Yeah,
because
hard to
it
top
was
that, to be fair.
very hard to stop that. Now, of course, it didn't go terribly well on the day, but like just getting there was just a dream come true, really. But I think this could be possibly a close second, I guess. It's just something that I never really thought was even possible, and to now sit here knowing that I've done it is it's just yeah, that's it's a really nice feeling.
Yeah, and you don't really come across as the kind of athlete that's done now. Just finally, what's next? Are there more records on the horizon to be broken by Katrina Jennings?
Well, I'm not quite sure yet. I'm definitely not finished. But yeah, I don't know what's in the near term. But next year, I'll definitely go back to South Africa in June for the Comrades race. That's a 90K race. That's held every year in June. It runs from Durban to Pietermaritzburg in South Africa, and it's one that I really, really enjoy doing. I've run it 4 times now, and I've finished in the top 10 4 times. And if you get 5 top 10 finishes, they give you a green number, and they retire that number from the race, so it's yours for life. So I've always run under the same bib number, and if I can manage to get another top 10 position, that will be my number forever. So that's kind of a nice goal to have.
Katrina Jennings, the fastest woman to ever run 100 miles. Thanks very much for joining us on the Score here this evening.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, what an inspiration Katrina is. And there will be a homecoming for Katrina in Letterkenny on Saturday afternoon. The Letterkenny AC woman will be given a hero's welcome at the Aura Leisure Centre from 4 o'clock on Saturday. And everyone is asked to get out and celebrate her remarkable achievement. I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like I need to go for a run or something after that interview. But I have a show to do, so maybe after. Let's move on to Gaelic Games. The Hurlers of Burt will aim to win their second ever Ulster Junior Club title when they come up against Lavey in this Saturday afternoon's provincial final. Burt won the Ulster Junior Club title in 2011, and memories of that day are still very much alive, with a handful of players still in the squad with the intentions of claiming a second Ulster winners medal on Saturday afternoon. I've been speaking with their manager, Enda McDermott, and he says there's a great buzz around the club in the lead-up to the game.
A bit of a buzz there, all right, Mark. It's the amount of text messages you're getting, even from like parents and that, and their kids, their children, like they're shouting about, they can't wait for the match to come, and can't wait to go and watch, So no, there definitely is. Like, even down about the club here, they're training last night. See them out cracking out the pairs down, looking forward to the going, things like that. No, it definitely does create a bit of a buzz and atmosphere about the place. Like,
yeah, I suppose you have a job to do, though, and it's a quick turnaround from winning that semi-final against Con McGee's on Sunday there. How have you been using these 6 days to prepare for the game?
I'm going to sound like a bit like a broken record here, Mark, but it is a quick turnaround, but I think I prefer that to the turnaround that we had from our club championship until we met Castle Leighlin last week in Ulster. We had a 12-week layoff and from our semi-final, Chitanta beat us until we played Castle Leighlin.
Yeah, that's
so
tough.
In my opinion now, playing week in, week out, it's got its pros and its cons. You know yourself, Mark, if somebody picks up that wee knock, they might struggle for the following week, but you're getting repetitive, competitive games, in my opinion.
And speaking of knocks, did everyone come through Sunday's game unscathed, or do you have any knocks that are of any concern?
No, we're a clean ball of health, thankfully. Everybody came through it grand, and we're full selection of full choice there. So, thankfully, we're good out that side of it. Like.
Good stuff. I know you were chatting to Chris Ashmore after the game on Sunday, and you hadn't seen much of Lavi by that stage. I think you mentioned you might have had a wee spy or two in Derry to get a bit of information on them. Have you managed to get to know them a bit?
We did. We got a bit of info on them, and I know it's just the highlights there, but I watched the highlights that the Ulster Council put up there, you know, on like social media and that.
Yeah.
So I've watched the likes of that, and going with that, it's comparison with the notes that I've got, if you know what I mean. But I always say, Mark, I don't like going to watch games to a certain extent, because I think it can take away from your own setup. If that makes sense. I like to put our stamp on it.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, there's a couple of boys we are going to be watching for, if you know what I mean. But at the same time, I want our players to go out and put their stamp in the game.
I suppose if you focus too much on them, you'll give up a bit of what has gotten you here in the first place. So it's important to really impose your own game plan on the game on Saturday.
That's towards impose our game plan. Like that's what I like to set out to do. But as I say, there is going to be men that's maybe probably doing a job for us, as in maybe marking certain individuals. But at the same time, I want our boys to stamp their authority in the game and put our marker down if you get my mark.
Yeah, you actually won this competition back in 2011, 14 years ago. It's a nice competition to be in, and it would be nice to bring some more provincial success back to the club this weekend.
Oh, definitely. In 2011, there's three or four there. You have Dara and Stevie, Christy, five maybe, Ronan and Paul Burns. Them boys were involved in 2011, so they kind of know what it's about. But for our boys, this is a whole new level for some of the younger boys. And it's great, the atmosphere that it creates. And as you say, if you were to bring that back to the club on Saturday, it would mean a massive amount to everybody involved. Even for the club itself, it'd be excellent to get a victory.
Yeah, and 2011, 14 years ago, as you say, there's only a handful of men that are still around from that. That's even more to the point that these occasions don't come around very often, and it's important that yourself and the coaches and the players and the members of the club really, really enjoy the next few days and then enjoy the game itself.
Exactly, that's what I said to them last night. In 2011, when we won that, as you say, 14 years ago, we haven't been anywhere near at Sunday Mark in intermediate or junior, and Saturday has to be enjoyed. Training last night, we enjoyed training. We obviously worked on stuff we had to work on, but at the same time, we're going to enjoy Saturday. We have got to an Ulster final that we haven't done in 14 years, and as I say, we're going to take it all on board, we're going to enjoy it, but at the same time, we're still going out to one day, put on a shift of work, and hopefully get over the line.
That's it, finals are there to be won, so best of luck on Saturday, and we'll be keeping a close eye on it here, and as I say, the very best of luck. Talk to you soon.
Perfect, Mark, thank you.
Bird manager Enda McDermott and Chris Ashmore will be providing live updates from the half one throw-in at Celtic Park for us on Saturday afternoon. Setanta will make their Ulster Senior Club Championship debut this Saturday evening with a clash against Neave Owen St John's of Antrim at the semi-final stage. It's been 11 weeks since the Donegal champions came from behind to beat St Unions in the county decider at O'Donnell Park, something that their manager Mark Marley says is far from ideal. In saying that, Marley insists this is where the club want to be and is relishing the opportunity to get a crack at some of the big names in the premier club competition in the province.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a good day. It's a big occasion for the club and one we're really looking forward to.
And Setanta, you know, winners of the Ulster Junior title in 2017 and then again in 2022. You followed that up by winning the Ulster Intermediate Championship 2 years ago. You've had good success in the provincial club competitions.
We kicked on there the last 4 or 5 years. We really upped the standard there, to one junior and one intermediate. It shows you the level of hurlers we have, and they're able to go on to Ulster and compete with them and move up through the ranks. And, ultimately now getting the seniors is where we want to be.
As you say, it's a step up this time around with a venture into the senior competition. Dining at the top table of club hurling here in the province, I'm sure your team are relishing the opportunity to step up and, I suppose, prove themselves at this level.
Oh, we are. No, look, it's our first year up here. You know, it's going to be a big challenge, but that's where you want to be. The boys is itching to get going now on Saturday and really looking forward to it. And, you know, it's just a momentous occasion for us and for the players themselves, you know.
What about Saturday's opponents, Niamh Owen of Antrim? We all know how strong Antrim teams tend to be. You'll be expecting to come up against a really good team at the weekend.
Yeah, St. John's, they're a very good team. We actually went and we watched them. We watched them on a couple of occasions and look, they have quality hurlers all over the place. Look, we're going in as underdogs, and rightly so. It's going to be a big challenge for us, but, you know, Antrim teams, we have a belief, you know, on our day that we can mix it with these boys, and, you know, we'll be hoping they give it their best shot, you know, and not be far off them.
Yeah, and the layoffs can be a wee bit of an issue when it comes to these kind of games. It's been a hot topic in the football the past couple of weeks. Come Saturday, it'll have been 11 weeks since you defeated St. Junan's in the county decider. Not exactly ideal preparation. How do you deal with that, Mark?
No, the 11 weeks now, it's a long time. You know, we took a few weeks off after the county final. And it's really, you're really going back to pre-season. You know, it's tough, but look, we knew that coming on, that is what it is, and we have to try and prepare ourselves as best we could, and look, you just have to get on with it and train hard and try and get up to the sharpness, and just hopefully we'll be up there with the match pace, you know, but it's not ideal now, the 11 weeks, it's tough.
I suppose it's a long enough break that you can get some real work done in terms of fitness and tactical work, so maybe there is a positive spin that you could put on it.
There is and there isn't. You can get your fitness and all, but you'll be lacking that competitive side, you know, games. You can get challenge games and all, but if you look at St. John's, they're coming to the back there of maybe 6 or 7 hard games, you know, and they're probably peaking. Where ourselves, we've probably peaked there in August and you're trying to get back up to that level, but you can get your fitness, but the other side you're lacking maybe is the match pace, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a bit of match sharpness. In terms of personnel for your own side on Saturday, have you got a full bill of health to choose from?
Hopefully there's one or two there carrying a couple of niggles, but hopefully we'll have a full panel day to come Saturday. Everybody will be ready to rock.
Setanta manager Mark Marley. The other Ulster Senior Club semi-final will take place on Sunday between Portaferry of Down and Slaughtneil of Derry. That game gets underway in Armagh at 3:30 on Sunday. And here in Donegal, it's Under-21 Championship quarter-final weekend in the football. On Saturday, Glenswilly will play Gidore at 2:30 in Glenswilly, while Niamh Connell will play St. Union's at Davy Brennan Memorial Park. That one is from 7 p.m. Then on Sunday, it's the turn of Termon and Iria Ballyshannon to lock horns at the Byrne Road, while Four Masters battle it out with Sean McCool's at Tyrconnell Park. Both of those games are at 2:30 on Sunday afternoon. Well, it's time for a short break here on The Score. When we come back, we'll be taking a look ahead to Sunday's clash between Gidore United and Gidore Celtic in the Donegal Junior League. Welcome back to The Score. Now, let's talk local soccer. The standout game of the weekend in the Donegal Junior League is the meeting of rivals Gidore United and Gidore Celtic at Carrickboyle. It's been some years since the Gidore clubs met in a league meeting, but Gidore Celtic's relegation from the Brian McCormick Premier Division to the Temple Domestic Appliances Division 1 this season has set up this mouth-watering encounter. It's more than just bragging rights that are up for grabs. United are bottom of the standings and have won just once in their first 5, while Celtic's drive to get back to the top division has seen them open the campaign with 4 defeats in their first 7. Highland's Chris Ashmore has been getting the thoughts of both camps in the build-up to the local derby. In a moment, we'll hear the thoughts of Gidore Celtic boss Michael McKelvey. But firstly, here is Gidore United's manager Paul McGee.
Well, Paul, a big, big game this coming weekend. Gidore United against Gidore Celtic, the Donegal Gaeltacht derby. I suppose you don't actually meet each other that often.
No, I suppose it's been a while now since we had a derby there. It's 4 years maybe, it's the last time we played in the derby in the Brian McCormick Cup, where we had a two-legged game that time, home and away, so that's probably the last time we met, you know, in the same division this year, and
No, it's a big derby in Gidore in the parish here. So, as I say, one side of the parish being against the other side, it's been a huge derby over the years, a big history with it. So, I'm looking forward to it, you know.
That's
a big occasion for the footballing community in Gidore, so it is.
So, what are the aims this season? I think you finished seventh last year. Can you push on, do you think, this year? Can you challenge for promotion?
Well, to be honest, Chris, I suppose we've got off to a kind of tough start with Gidore. Reserves and seniors doing well in the Gaelic. Both teams getting onto the county finals, respective teams. And then we have our Gaelic players that we didn't have them at the start. You can probably still don't have them at the minute. And then at the minute as well, we have five or six injuries where senior players are out, I suppose. The likes of Dan O'Donnell in defence, Kieran McFadden is a big goal scorer for us over the years. Stephen Doyle McFadden scores a lot of goals for us. Only Gallagher experienced there. And Matthew Galway got a bad injury at the start of the season as well. So we're missing a fair group of players. But that said, we're taking the positives out of it. Last week there, we had under 17 lads starting in our game, and the same the week before. So even though we've had a tough start, we're looking forward to the rest of the season with the young lads coming through. And we have a bit of experience on there too with Darren Ferry, holding the fort for the senior players, I suppose. Most of our team would be probably under 21, with Darren probably in his 30s, just keep talking the young lads through the game and stuff like that. So what we're kind of aiming at the minute is just to hold our own in this division this year, because we've had a tight start with injuries and with the Gaelic doing so well. So I suppose we're looking to stay in the division, and that's our aim, I suppose, at this present time,
Well, as the season goes on, and hopefully you might get stronger, you might get the momentum and get a string of good results. Off the pitch, Carrick Boyle, I suppose it was probably one of the first clubs in the Donegal League to have floodlights, and you've got the bit of cover down there as well, which is handy on a wet and windy day, the Astro pitch, of course, and all the underage stuff. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, a lot going on for the club. But no, the club's actually in a good place itself. At the minute, we're actually developing our clubhouse. Now, that has been a wee bit longer than we expected, but we're progressing fairly well, and we're looking to open that hopefully early in the new year with new the dressing rooms and a new gym and a new kitchen and new meeting rooms and different things like that in the two-story. So we're looking forward to that. That's a big plus. That'll help our youths as well. They'll have places to go and things like that, and social kind of meetings and stuff like that. And then we have a planning for a second pitch as well. So facility-wise, we're in a good place. I suppose the overall aim would be to be at the top table, I suppose, when we have all the facilities ready and the youth structure coming through. We have a lot of positives there as well. As I said, we had five under-17s playing there, Callum Perter, Ian Heffernan, who's 16. He's played a second senior game there for us, and he's been excellent in the two games that he's played. We have other young lads coming through. Brian McFadden, Darren McFadden, he's come into the fold there this last 2 years. He's only 17. Aidan Doherty, Matthew Gallagher, Sean Doherty coming under, Stephen Mulhern and Shane O'Brien. A lot of young lads coming through our youth system, coming into the senior squad. And them lads are kind of just, they're primarily they're playing football for us. They don't play any Gaelic or stuff like that. So that's good for us. We have a bright future ahead, we think, and that's the plan. We're looking to push on. We've been stalled this year, maybe at the start of the season, but we're looking to push on maybe in the next few years, for sure. Yeah.
Hard to believe. I was just looking up there. I think it was August 84 when you had the first game down at Carrick Boyle, Finn Harps and Derry City in a friendly.
That's right, yeah.
Con McLaughlin and Paul McGee. So over 40 years ago, gosh.
Over 50th anniversary is coming up now in 2 years, 2027. The club was established in 1977, so we have a big date coming up there, so we'll be looking to do something big there. But no, the pitch opened in 1984, and just looking at the pitch now, it's probably ahead of its time at that stage. We have dressing rooms and showers and everything like that there, but when you look around the county now, all the soccer clubs, it's brilliant to see all the facilities that have come a long way. And I suppose we thought we were ahead of everybody, and you probably think, Paul, we were behind then. But we've caught up, as you said there. We got the floodlights. We're probably one of the first clubs in the country to get the floodlights up, and an AstroTurf there for training and stuff like that, and both floodlights and all in the new clubhouse. So now, look, ourselves and other clubs, football clubs, the county's in a good place with facilities anyway, that's for sure.
No doubt about that. So it's a 1 o'clock start on Sunday for the big derby game. What way do you see it going? I suppose a draw wouldn't be unexpected.
Yeah, I suppose like you're going out to win the game, I suppose. Looking at the two squads, knowing each other locally, I suppose, both clubs were very young, two young teams. So a lot of these young lads wouldn't have played. A lot of these young lads wouldn't have played in a senior derby before on this big occasion. You know? So it's hard to tell, but you're always going to have to look for the one, I suppose. And we're at home, so we'll be looking for to go for the three points as well. So we'll be hoping for 3 points, and I suppose we'll see how it goes then. Like, you know.
And finally, Paul, I was just looking at the figures for last year. I think you scored 55 goals. You had 66 against. You scored more goals than Glenay United, who won the league. So you conceded a few as well. So you were probably one of the most entertaining teams to watch if you wanted to see goals.
No, we got plenty of goals last year now. Young Brian McFadden, as I said, he was only 16 last year. He was nearly top goal scorer in the division, which is phenomenal for him. He's done really well. He came into the squad 2 years ago there, and he's flying in there. No, look, we're, as I say, last year we probably conceded a few too many than we wanted, but we've tightened things up. As I say, a few injuries, when them boys come back, we'll be a wee bit tighter this year, and hopefully score a few more goals as well when Kieran McFadden and Stephen Doyle McFadden, the likes of them, come back to help Brian as well. Like, so look, we'll be hoping to get more goals on the board as the season goes on, I suppose, and be entertaining as well. Like, down in Cagbar, we get good crowds down there, so we like to put on a good show for them at home as well. So hopefully we'll do the same on Sunday.
Michael, big derby game for both clubs, of course. I suppose it's been a bit of a mixed bag for yourselves since the start of the season. You've played 7, won 2, drawn 1 and lost 4. So mid-table at the moment.
It was kind of a difficult enough start. You know, we were kind of struggling there with the end of the season with Gaelic. We were missing a few players. We had quite a young team out as well, like, you know, so... you know, a few results, we were kind of in games, and you know, I don't think every result was a reflection of what, how we played, but considering where we are, like, you know, I think we would want to be further up the table now, in fairness.
Yeah, now, like yourselves, Gweedore United, of course, players on Gaelic duty as well and players injured, so they've had their difficulties early in the season as well. As the season progresses, at the moment Capri Rovers and Castlefin and Kerry Keel seem to be sort of the top three. Having come down from a higher level last year, what's the aim this year? Is it to sort of consolidate in this division?
Oh yeah, well, like, the quality is quite high, I must say. Like, we played Rathmullen there a couple of weeks ago, and we actually played them for about 50 minutes with 10 men. And, you know, we were actually quite disappointed not coming away with at least a point. Like, we had them on the ropes for long enough, you know, but they just had that bit more experience than we did. Same as Kerry Keel. I came down, we were leading them for long spells, and then just second half, you know, you can see their experience maybe... fitness wise too, they kind of pulled away at the end. So yeah, there's a lot of quality there. Castlefin now on Sunday, it was a tight enough game. We played really, really well, took our chances when they came our way, and they caused a lot of difficulty. So, you know, you can see that there's a lot of competition there, you know, for boys trying to get up now to the Premier.
Now, what about the rivalry? There'll be a good old crowd, I suspect, especially if the weather's half decent for the game in Carrickboyle. Probably because a lot of the time you're not always in the same division. You've probably met each other maybe more in the Brian McCormick Cup than in league games in recent years.
It's fairly seldom now we're in the same division. So, like, cup games, it can be a feisty enough affair. We met each other in the Brian McCormick, I think it was 2 seasons ago, where we had a draw at home and then we had a defeat down there, you know, down in Carrickboyle. So, but, you know, we're looking forward to it. It's local derby. You know, a lot of our boys play together in the Gaelic, so, you know, there's that little bit of extra spice in it. You know, when they're playing against each other, you know, they want the bragging rights. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds now on Sunday.
And away from the first team at underage level, how are things at the club at the moment? Are there many youngsters coming through?
There's a good number coming through there. We have wee Adam McBride coming through. He was up at Harps for a while. You see, we have a very, very young age profile. When you look at the squad we have at the minute, I would say our average age is very low 20s, maybe 20, 21 years of age. So we have a lot of good, decent young players. And you can see further on down now, our under 14s are in the Champions League final next Wednesday. So there's a lot of good work being done underage, like, you know, so hopefully now in the next couple of years it'll come to the fore.
And the Temple Domestic Appliance Division 1 of the Donegal Junior League, it's often perhaps the most competitive of the divisions, because there's always something to play for, even right at the end of the season. Rarely is a team sort of becalmed in mid-table. You're either pushing to go up or you're fighting to stay up, and there's certainly no easy games.
Oh, definitely. Like, we got relegated from Premier Division, I think it was 2017, and like, we spent a good few years there. It's a very difficult league to get out of. As you said, it's very, very competitive. It's always on the day. It can be very attritional. But still, there's good quality there. Like, whereas like, we were in Premier there for the last couple of years, you could see the top teams just was wee bit ahead of us, like, you know, and it was kind of the quality is kind of just going away at the top. But in First Division now, I must say, it's on any given day, like, there can be any results thrown around, so you take nothing for granted, like.
And finally, what way do you see the game panning out on Sunday? Do you think it's going to be a fairly tight affair?
Oh, it's going to be like the slip of a paper. Like, it's always a tight, really competitive, and you know, you get nothing easy down Carrick Boyle. They'll be well up for it. But same as ourselves, like, we are well up for it. Like, we're looking forward to the challenge now and going down there, and you know, it's just on the day. But I would say it's going to be very, very tight, whatever way it goes.
That is Gidor Celtic manager Michael McKelvey, and before that was Gidor United manager Paul McGee. Chris will be back on duty for Highland at that game on Sunday and bringing us live updates. Kickoff is at 1 o'clock at Carrick Boyle. There are fixtures across all divisions of the Donegal and Inishowen leagues across Saturday and Sunday, so you can of course tune into our weekend sports shows to keep up to date with all of that. The two North West clubs are playing in the NIFL Championship on Saturday. Institute play Anna, while Limavady are away to Loughgall. Now, we're turning the focus on to the Victor Irish Open in badminton. Donegal interest is focused on Joshua McGee and Rachel Dara. In fact, Joshua and Mohammed Izzedine Shamsul topped the qualification score sheets on Wednesday to secure their spots in the men's doubles draw. Meanwhile, 2024 Olympian Rachel Dara is in the women's singles. To take a look at the sport, both locally and nationally, our own Chris Ashmore has been speaking with the three-time Olympian Chloe McGee. The McGee family are synonymous with badminton here in Donegal and indeed Ireland. Chloe is Badminton Ireland's Women in Sport and National Development Manager and a sister of the aforementioned Joshua, while her brother Daniel McGee is Performance and Training Director, and Rachel Dara is Chloe's niece. Chris began by putting it to Chloe that the sport is very much on the up at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think in all parts of badminton has grown. It's grown at a very fast rate at the minute. Obviously, COVID, like a lot of indoor sports, it hit badminton really, really hard. And I think we struggled after that to get 10,000 members, and we're up to 18,000 members now playing badminton all around Ireland. So that's amazing. And even the high performance, we've got a lot more players in the centre now, waiting for a brand new centre. The Velodrome down in Dublin, once it's going to be built, it's going to have 12 badminton courts down there. So I think in general, all the development programs, the different coaching programs, high performance, and even the women's sport programs, they're all booming at the minute.
And I suppose in many ways it shows that if you do have the investment in a sport, it does reap the dividends.
Yeah, definitely. Like, funding is everything, and especially for small sports, it's hard for us to, once we get the funding, to invest in everything. But thankfully, this last couple of years, Sport Ireland has really helped us and come on board to even different grassroots programs, women's sport, the schools programs. And as you say, like, once you start investing at these levels, you reap the benefits for sure.
Now, the top players from Ireland, in order to pursue and continue their careers, as you did yourself, it means a lot of travel, playing abroad a lot. So the elite Irish and international representatives at the moment, what stage of the sort of season, what stage of the year are we at?
Yeah, so the guys, like, it's no secret that Bampton is massive in Asia. So once you're doing well in Bampton, a lot of the big events are based over there. So there is a lot of travel involved when you are the high performance athlete. But this week, the Irish Open is on in Dublin. So this is like a high ranked event. The guys are all working towards world ranking points. And there's prize money for all the events that they play now as well. So all the events that they play are very important, but their home event is for them, it's like a main target for the year. You could say it's their Olympics on the year that there is no Olympics. So all the guys have been training hard for this. And, you know, they're in a busy period at the minute. They're the European, so there's different world tours, but this is kind of like the European leg of it. And so they've been in quite a few tournaments recently, and this is their home turf this week.
Now, tell us a little bit about the Irish Open, where it's actually staged, and we have people from basically all over the world coming to it.
Yeah, so it's been played in the National Indoor Arena in Dublin, and they have a really good setup there. I think they have a lot of sporting events, but the Irish Open goes there every year, and it's a brilliant arena. We have Rachel and Josh are obviously our two main competitors from the Northwest, but yeah, there's players coming from, I think there's a team from Korea coming, there's Danish coming, French, Germans, all the top players are coming. So the ladies singles in particular is very heavily stacked this year, but the guys are looking forward to it, and that's what you want. You want the best players in the world coming to your international tournament, and they're going to get a really good competition this week.
Now, you are a three-time Olympian, holder of, I think, 26 national titles, including 10 women's singles. You've mentioned there Rachel Dara, of course, an Olympian as well, but she was out of the game for a while, had to undergo surgery. So where is she in terms of getting back to reaching the heights again?
Yeah, the Olympic qualifying, as always, it's a really, really tough year for all athletes, and Rachel picked up an injury during the qualifying on her wrist, and it was... she probably played through a lot of pain to get to the Olympics. As you know, it's like the biggest sporting event in the world. So she wanted to go and compete there. And then after the Olympics, she had to take a step back, and she ended up getting surgery on her wrist. So as every athlete knows, it's never a straight line back to rugby after an injury, and especially after surgery. So she's up and down. She is eventually getting back now. She's back playing competitions. But I'd say she still has a bit of work to do on her wrist to get it fully better and back to where she is at full health. But she's getting there, and slowly but surely she's putting the games together and getting it strengthened up. So hopefully this week now it's another stepstone towards getting back to her full health.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned how strong the sport is in Asia. Mm-hmm. In terms of world and European rankings, the top Irish players at the moment, sort of where are they in terms of those overall rankings?
Well, Nat McGuinn, he's the men's singles. He's definitely competing very well. He's at 28 in the world now. He's playing all the top tournaments, and he's starting to compete really, really well with the top players in the world. So we are thereabouts. The guys are all aiming towards trying to get those European medals. So Sam, myself, we were the first to get a European medal in Bampton, but these guys are all now, you've got, like, back then it was probably just Sam, myself, and Scott Evans, whereas now you've got 6-7 different people that are going to these tournaments and are able to medal. So they are aiming towards that. And of course, the biggest thing for Bampton is the Olympic Games in LA in a couple of years' time.
And the hope would be, you know, on the upside, how many competitors could we possibly have there?
Yeah, that's it. Like, the Olympics in Bampton is just completely different to the main stage events. So, like, in singles, you have 32 people qualifying, whereas in doubles events, 16. So it's a big difference there, but we do hope, or we would like to get a doubles pair. I think we've never had a doubles pair in the Olympics before, so we would like to get a doubles pair there. But at the minute, the target is obviously two singles players, and then if they did get a doubles pair in LA, it would be massive for Bampton.
Yeah. Now, Rachel's certainly flying the flag for the county, mm-hmm. and for the country. Here in Donegal, just how healthy is the sport at the moment? Like the national picture, are we seeing a rise mm-hmm. in numbers?
Yeah, we definitely are. And last year alone, there was three or four new clubs started in Donegal. So Donegal's doing really, really well. They've got a brilliant league system for all level of play, from social players to players, and they have a lot of cup events. And now they're also starting to get some coaching courses here. So you could definitely say that Bampton is definitely on the up in Donegal as well as it is nationally.
Yeah, and throughout the country, are there pockets where it's stronger in some places than others? Is there much of a regional balance or imbalance?
Yeah, there definitely is. Like, you've different areas, for example, Lisburn and Dublin, where they have more coaches that are working full. There's a lot now, coaches that are taking their full-time employment is working as a Bampton coach, and that's never been before. So there is areas in Ireland that you do have one or two of these coaches, and that's making a huge difference to the level and the standard of play in these different counties. So there is a couple of pockets that are getting good, like Munster have also, there's a couple of coaches that are down there now, so there's a couple of good players coming out of Cork and Galway, which we've never seen before. So as you said at the start of the conversation, once you put investment into anything, you do reap the rewards, and we've put a lot of investment into getting more, you could say, high-level coaches working in Ireland with our younger players, and we're starting to see huge, huge rewards from that, with players coming from all around Ireland now getting on the Irish team and not just maybe centred towards one or two areas.
And the sport has been, I suppose, so much of your life, and now, you know, great to still be involved, and indeed the whole McGee family, and Daniel, performance and training director as well. So There's no shortage of badminton talk still around the table.
Yeah, definitely. I think I feel very lucky. Badminton has given me a lot, from a career to now, obviously, a professional career and, you know, a working career. So I owe the sport a lot. And I'm lucky. I really enjoy my job. I enjoy working in development. I enjoy seeing the sport grow. And to be part of the sport at this really exciting time is really, really good. So I'm learning from my peers every day in the working life as well. So it is great. It's a great sport, and we're very lucky for everything it's given us.
Now, your job title, Women in Sport and National Development Manager. So is there a particular emphasis on trying to get more women into the sport?
Yeah, so there's a lot of areas in the women in sport. So I think we're all aware that teenage girls is a big one this year through the Her Moves program. You know, it's where the girls are dropping out of sport. It's no secret. It's the same in all sports. So we've had targeted programs towards teenage girls. We've also had targeted programs towards women's coaching. So we have our Just for Women coaching programs, where it's really helped women to just grow and they feel more confident in that environment. And we've also had social programs, so Come and Try events that are just for women. So we've put a lot of targeted programs, and we're also starting to see a lot of rewards from that. Like, we've had 1,000 girls go through our badminton program. So that was a massive target for us this year, and we're delighted now by Christmas that we will have 1,000 girls gone through that programme. 1,000 girls that have never played badminton before and are now playing and staying in the game.
Yeah, that's certainly very encouraging. The other part of your job, National Development Manager, you touched on the fact that there's been a number of new clubs in Donegal and also other counties. So, you know, the sport, there's no doubt about it, it is growing.
Yeah, it is. And through the development, like, we've put a lot of work into our schools. So, you know, all around Ireland, there's been, we've got different programs again, targeted programs at primary schools, secondary schools, teenagers. And we are starting to see, like, there is, like all sports, if we had more volunteers, I think we would have so many more clubs in the morning. But it's getting harder and harder to get volunteers. So we do see with clubs, if we had more volunteers, we would have the clubs. But it's just like, the kids have the interest. When people start playing badminton, they always really enjoy it. So we just need to find ways now to get more volunteers in the sport and keep growing the sport at the rate it's going.
And finally, Chloe, if people want to keep tabs on Badminton Ireland, you are very active on social media. Badminton Ireland puts up a lot of links, and there's coverage of all the big events, many of them, be it YouTube or online, sometimes live streaming. So that's probably the first port of call.
Yeah, so you can all, as you said, Badminton Ireland are very active on social media, and we have a full streaming this week. All the games will be streamed online free, and anything, all the information is on badmintonireland.com. So we try to keep our social media up to date as much as we can, and this week I know we've got a full team working on it. So do keep an eye out, because there'll be a lot of good coverage going up online.
Chloe McGee in conversation with Chris Ashmore regarding all things badminton, very much a sport that is on the up here in Donegal and across the rest of the country. Plenty of provincial rugby games this Saturday. OMA play Bangor in Ulster Championship 1. Letterkenny will look to move up the table as they go to Grosvenor in Championship 2. Elsewhere, Lisburn travel to play City of Derry. Alec McDonald will be at that one for us. And second place Limavady are away to fourth placed Academy. In the Provincial North League, Limavady seconds are away to Donegal Town. And finally, in the Gordon West Cup, Cavan play Strabane and Coleraine are away to PSNA. Finally, for this evening in athletics, there will be a remembrance run on Sunday morning at the Finn Valley Centre. There are 5 or 10k options. It has a 10am start and you can register for the walk, jog or run on the morning at 8 o'clock. Well, that is just about it for this episode of The Score. My name is Mark Gallagher, and if you missed any of tonight's show, it will be available to listen back to very shortly over on our website at highlandradio.com. Your next sports update will be with Chris Ashmore, who'll be at the sports desk during the 8 o'clock news tomorrow morning. Have a great evening, and I will talk to you all again soon.